Hi, this is Katie Hagen with the Edgenomics Lab at Georgetown University, and today I'm talking with Donna Nestor from the Mississippi State Education Agency about Mississippi's educational cost accounting. So their chart of accounts and then their rules that surround their chart of accounts and how they came into be and kind of why Mississippi has made some of the decisions that they have to have their particular cost accounting and in their existing structure. And we're having this conversation because of a Building State Capacity and Productivity Center report that's coming out as well, that is about how SEAs are going to make decisions about central costs and building level costs with the new ESSA financial transparency requirement. So Donna, thank you so much for agreeing to have this conversation with me today, and we will jump right in.
Okay, thank you.
So what first prompted Mississippi to begin collecting per pupil expenditure data either at all or, you know, down to a school level? Kind of what is the origin of Mississippi's chart of accounts and accounting structure?
Well, Katie, as I understand it, somewhere about 1985, a committee was formed, and the need, you know, was known that there needed to be an accounting manual of some sort put into place for the school districts. And the committee met and decided to adopt the national recommendation, which at that time I was told was referred to as Handbook Number 2. My best evaluation is that is the precursor to the NCES model that now exists. And so since the mid-80s, Mississippi has just tried very hard to align their chart of accounts or their accounting manual with what is required at the national level. And so for that reason, you know, we just feel like our chart of accounts is very detailed and that, you know, we needed to go ahead and assign some of those costs at the school level. And so over the years, the decision in the handbook reflects that any expenditure that's in the instructional portion of the function range would automatically go to the school level. Unfortunately, that's not necessarily mandated, and schools do have the option to purchase at a central location rather than at a school location, but we do require that they move as much of that cost down to the school level as they can.
Thanks. That kind of gets into my next question, is just this description of the chart of account and the associated rules for utilizing the school level code. So you just mentioned there are rules, but maybe not enforceable or as strong of a requirement in terms of the utilization of the school level code for instructional expenses. Are there any other expenses that that LEAs should or are recommended to push down to the school level if possible?
Well, at this time, we try to require, if you will, that they code everything from function code 1000 through function code 2490, which would encompass, you know, your high school, elementary, middle school, all of those instructional codes down through the principal's office coding. There is one little exception there in the middle. The 2300s is the board expenditures for your board of education at each district. But by and large, we have asked that they use all of those, anything they code to those functions should also go at a school location and not be coded at the 001 level. But if I could provide you an example, in some instances, they may be purchasing a large quantity of computers. And so at the time of the computer purchase, maybe on a one-to-one initiative, they're buying laptops for all the students. And at that time, they're not necessarily sure that 100 are going to the high school and 50 are going to the middle school. And so for convenience, they will bid out for the full, you know, 1500 computers or whatever it is that they're purchasing, and they will code that purchase to 001 for the convenience of making the purchase. But then at a later time, they may come back and journal what portion of that cost goes to the school level. So that's one of the instances where they are utilizing the chart of accounts and they are following our directive to put it at the school level, but not necessarily every purchase is immediately coded at the school level.
That makes sense. So there's flexibility there based on how the LEA is making their purchases. They don't feel like they have to purchase things in a way because the chart of account dictates them to do so.
That's correct. But we do encourage that. And because of this new requirement coming to us. We have begun to have meetings with all of our business managers in the districts, and we've asked them to look critically at all expenditures, including those that have long been considered central expenditures, such as maintenance, transportation, the business office, you know, central staff, and to work toward having all of those that, you know, immediately that are possible pushed out at the school level, or to begin to consider how they would want to, you know, say transportation, how they would want to move those expenses out to the school level. As I'm sure you have appreciated in all of these sessions that we've had, each district has the flexibility to operate to the best of their ability, you know, to suit their community needs. And so if their bus fleet serves all school locations, then it becomes very difficult to assign a bus to a school location. And so we are now having those conversations to see if we want to come forward with a state mandate on how that's going to happen, or if we want to continue to allow flexibility in the school district, just to say, okay, we're going to require that you do that, but how you do that would be up to you.
That makes sense. So I'm going to move us forward one question, because I think this follows our conversation. What do you see as the benefits of allowing kind of that flexibility at the LEA level, maybe prescribing some things like the instructional costs, like you mentioned, but then allowing for flexibility on the other expenditures?
Just what we just mentioned, I think for the convenience of a large purchase that maybe a district is needing to facilitate, you know, many times the expediency of a bid or a large purchase needs to move forward quickly, and the district knows a quantity that they need, but at the time they may not know specifically where those items may be going in the district, or maybe for budget reasons they're making this purchase now to expend certain funds so that they can have these things in inventory or in stock, and then they'll make the decision in a following year on how they're going to be dispersed. If they're forced into doing it at a school level, then I think sometimes that slows the process. And so I think our hybrid system allows a great deal of flexibility. Another situation that we've come across as we've started this conversation, we have a lot of districts who share resources. And so when they have a situation of a shared facility, say a vocational center or an alternative site, a magnet school, things of those nature, one district may claim that location under a fiscal umbrella while both schools feed them enrollment numbers. And so, you know, for expediency, they may code those as central costs and then decide between the two districts who's going to pay who and who's going to code what. And I think our system allows for that flexibility on the front end, and they have the entire year to decide how to code and get that cleaned up in their general ledger to report it at the end of the year.
That's great. Sounds like that would be a pretty messy system if it was super prescriptive. They wouldn't be able to find those kinds of productivity improvements, you know, sharing costs across districts if they had to, you know, code it a specific way or track all those costs down to a building level. So you mentioned that a potential drawback for this LEA flexibility is that, you know, they might slow down the process a little bit. But what are some of the other things that you see as a potential drawback for allowing LEA flexibility when it comes to reporting expenditures by choice down to the school or at the central office level?
Well, one of the first problems that we see, or a drawback, it does allow that flexibility, but then the way our system is established here in the state of Mississippi, we prescribe the manual and the best guidelines that we think are in place for the accounting, but we are not responsible for the audit or the monitoring of how the districts accomplish that goal. And so the state auditor's office is responsible for the financial audit that occurs in the school district. And so for that reason, I may tell through the manual that the coding of a computer should be a certain prescribed code, And then the auditor's office is responsible for going in and monitoring the districts that they did code their purchases correctly. And so one of the drawbacks that we're finding is, one, just through the audit process, you know, they do a sampling, they don't necessarily audit every expense. We are finding that that districts do often code things differently than we prescribe. Not necessarily that they're breaking the law or that it is against the code, but that in their determination, a different code fits the situation better. And I have an example that I can give you. So when you purchase computers, in some districts, they will code that to a particular function that is more of a instructional services type function description. And then in some districts, they are coding it to a different function level that says computer-aided instruction. And so our business managers are very vocal on their defense of how they code their expenditures. And I'm not sure that that there is a right or a wrong. It's just a flexibility. And where that presents a drawback for me at the state level is when I try to pull a comparative report to say what has been spent on computers. If I go, you know, I go to the code that I think represents the computer expenditure, I may be missing some of those expenditures. So that's some of the drawbacks that I see in allowing the flexibility and not having a strict mandated system, you know, in the coding. At least that's the way I see that. Of course, the biggest drawback that I see to our system is we're now faced with trying to produce a report at a per pupil level for our school locations. And that's going to be very difficult for some of our districts to accomplish simply because of the hybrid nature of our coding.
Can you, well, we'll go back to that in just a second. I want you to say a little bit more about that. But I do just want to touch on, for folks that are listening, this level of how prescriptive to be is kind of what every state is going through right now. It's particularly if you already have a common chart of accounts. A lot of states are looking at, you know, just breaking it down as much as possible and being very prescriptive because of that comparability issue that Donna just mentioned. You know, the desire to want to compare school expenditures by function level and object level and those sorts of things versus, you know, allowing the flexibility so that districts can find productivity improvements. And that's kind of the crux of this issue for a lot of folks is that, you know, to be more prescriptive or to be less prescriptive is a trade-off in comparability. And for some states, it's valuable to be able to make those exact comparisons, like Donna just mentioned, about pulling, you know, computer purchases and being able to look at that across schools and across districts. Whereas for others, it's more about that total number. And so it's just an important consideration to keep in mind. So Donna, I'd love for you to explain a little bit more about the trouble that you see with your hybrid model in terms of meeting the ESSER requirements.
Well, as our discussions have grown in the last several weeks, specifically, it's just the period of time where we have the opportunity to meet with several of the districts during the summer. Some of the problems that we're anticipating are building around, as I mentioned earlier, those shared facilities where we have districts who are sharing facilities and how they're going to divide those expenses and or those enrollments, you know, between them. For our larger districts, you know, and we have a process right now where we collect their financial data at the end of the school term. They close out and they transmit all of that financial data to us at the state, and then I'm able to generate those state reports quite easily. In doing that, we are looking at how do we take all of those central expenditures, and we refer to those as the 001 expenditures. How do we have the district code everything in 001 out to a location prior to sending it to the state so that I am able to then just turn around and churn out reports based on enrollment, which is also captured at the state? I feel like on the one hand, the district needs to make that conversion prior to me taking the data. because they know those circumstances we just mentioned about shared facilities, or if they have a magnet school and they're pulling enrollment from several locations in their districts, they know best how to allocate those resources within those districts back to those school locations. I will not have that knowledge. And so if they convert that information to the location codes before it's sent to me, then I'm working with a much better data set when I produce the SEA report. On the other hand, for our larger districts, we're talking about thousands and thousands of line items of journal entries that would need to be made to move those expenditures into those locations. And so we've also looked at the opportunity that perhaps they simply transmit their data as they have to me at the end of the year, and I run the conversion for them based on locations that are established in the system and the enrollment that is reported, and simply arrive at a basic per pupil cost. So, you know, right now trying to determine which way gives the best picture of what's actually happening in the district and the state, and also capturing those special circumstances that are happening in districts without creating an enormous amount of work in some of our much larger districts.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Have you considered making both options available?
No. I think right now the leadership wants to have these focus groups and research studies to determine maybe the most widely accepted process and come to one conclusion. I think our districts will function better if we come to a decision and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. I know that I was both relieved and upset by the fact that the extension was granted, because when you're faced with a deadline, you push forward on your requirements.
Right.
And so I think right now we are going to go ahead and move forward with attempting to produce something with our fiscal year 18 data and call it a test year so that we can work through some of the mechanics and some of the bugs. Because we really want to stay, you know, I think we would like to see Mississippi stay a little ahead of the curve on this one and not have to play catch up when it is
actually. Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you're doing all the right things. So do you have any advice that you would give to other SEAs as they consider kind of building this out? So I'm thinking about particularly SEAs that have a common chart of accounts or in the development of ones, but they're not currently capturing cost at the building level, or SEAs who are thinking about the role that they're going to play, you know, how prescriptive they're going to be versus how flexible they're going to allow, you know, how the amount of flexibility they're going to give to their LEAs. What kind of advice would you give to SEAs as they work through these options?
You know, I find myself caught between two avenues of thought, and that is, if you're a blank slate right now, as an accounting-minded person, I move to the prescriptive. You know, if I were a blank slate in the state of Mississippi, I think I would design a system that said, you know, thou shalt do this, and everything would be laid out, even the methodologies of how to take your enrollment and divide it into anything you think is a central cost, say transportation or the superintendent's salary or something of that nature. Because I think if you've never done it and you're handed a set of rules, it's much easier to just implement the rules. However, you know, we tend to be in education, and I accept this mandate, if you will, or this train of thought to say districts need to have the flexibility to make the district work for their community. And so if they have a special population that needs a special accommodation, they need the flexibility of being able to do things differently and not fit this very rigid prescribed system. So, I catch myself kind of caught in the middle. But my advice would be for other SEAs going into this, you know, if you have the time, which I know we're all fighting a clock that's coming, but if you have the time to go ahead and pull those focus groups in, pull your districts in, and have these very open conversations about any of those circumstances that are happening, and if they could from that go ahead and develop a prescribed system that works for their state, I think that's the way to go. I think the old adage of change is harder for those who are accustomed to doing something. The new business managers that I have coming into play are not nearly as upset by the requirement of this per pupil as my seasoned business managers who have been in play for a long time. And I think that's just simply because to change from the way we have been into a new way is just more difficult for them. So I know that's not great advice because I flip-flopped all over, but I think that a state that has an opportunity to go forward might want to go a little more prescriptive.
Well, yeah, thank you. You just described exactly the place where I think most people's thinking is on this. There are very clear strengths and weaknesses of each model. So thank you for being honest and putting that out there.
As far as, on the prescriptive, that may seem a little more controlling or rigid, but to me, that goes back to then the comparability. You know, if what we're being asked through ESSA is to be, to be able to show comparisons between schools and districts, to me, that almost requires a more rigid system. And so, on the one hand, I'm all about flexibility and letting a district conform to its community. But then on the other side, I see the need on the federal and the state level to try to make some type of comparisons. So that is difficult. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, that's great. And I'll just say it because I think Margaret would be upset if I didn't say it. The advice that the Agenomics Lab and the DSCP Center has kind of been putting forward is compare your totals and build in outcomes into those reporting. And, the comparisons of object codes and function codes can be extremely useful, particularly to folks who are financially savvy. But in terms of getting the best outcomes for kids, people can spend money in very different ways and all do well. So I think that is one thing that we've been trying to get states to think about when they are building their processes and coming to their particular philosophy about how they would like to approach this, is that, don't divorce it from outcomes and don't get too caught up in the comparability of specific line items, because people can spend their money very differently and get very different outcomes or the same outcomes. Yeah. But it's hard. It's really hard because that's the first place people go when you show them a total. And you show them, how kids are doing, the first thing they want to know is how they spend their money. So at some point, you almost need that very robust data system, even if you're just disproving assumptions or something. People are going to want the data.
Right. I mean, comparisons are good, but in education, we're not manufacturing widgets. And so, every student is different and has different needs. And so sometimes comparability is not a great thing.
Right. Yeah. At least comparability in terms of how you're spending or exactly what, programs you are investing in or things like that, because it is so human that, it's almost, I think it is useful to look at how much people are spending and what kind of outcomes they're getting for their spending. I think that can be a helpful management tool. But in terms of, are you spending 60% of your dollars on instruction versus, 40% non-instruction? If you're getting good results at 50-50 and 80-20, does it matter? And so I think that's kind of been the biggest push that we've tried to help states think through. And it sounds like you're wrestling with all the same things that every state is right now too. So we appreciate your candidness. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we wrap up?
No, other than to say that I do appreciate Agenomics and the fact that they have allowed us this forum to come together and talk about this, even though, we may not have been as vocal. We've certainly listened in to all the discussions, and it has greatly enhanced our discussions here in the state with our districts. And I would encourage states that are not involved to reach out and get involved, or even to reach out to the states who are in the study group, because I think it's valuable information.
Thank you. Appreciate that plug. So this is a conversation with Donna Nestor from Mississippi. I'm Katie Hagen, and I'm with the Edgenomics Lab at Georgetown. We are an affiliate of the BSCP Center, the Building State Capacity and Productivity Center. If you have any questions about this podcast or anything else that we're producing, you can email me at katie.hagen@georgetown.edu. And Donna, thank you so much for being here today. I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you, Katie. Bye-bye.
Bye.